everyone. This is Tala with Drive Through Therapy. Thank you guys so much for joining me tonight on another episode. And I'm so grateful for your support as always. So tonight is a very fun topic for me because I could relate. I really could relate at one point with this topic of social anxiety. What the hell is social anxiety? And how do we help control or manage, or even better, I'm not even talking about managing. I'm talking about transcending the idea of social anxiety. In the clinical world, sometimes we get too stiff about it and we make it sound like you've got a problem, like a problem that is a disorder and nobody else has, and you're just back to the bone. And we tell you that you got social anxiety. And a lot of people just stop there with the label. I have social anxiety and that's it. I am going to make sure today to let you know that social anxiety is quite normal. It's so damn normal. I don't even know why it's called a disorder. I guess we just kind of want names for stuff. It makes us feel comfortable. But in reality, we can work on it. We can all work on it. And it's just addressing something within us that, and taking responsibility of addressing those skills that need to be developed in order for us to transcend this idea of social anxiety. Social anxiety is defined as a condition in which social interactions cause irrational anxiety or irrational thinking that results in anxiety. And this happens usually when you're around people. But in all truth, it's not just when you're interacting with people, but if you are even thinking about going to a place where there's people there, you're going to start experiencing those anxious symptoms. When you think about people in general, you might experience anxious symptoms. But all of this, like I said, and I want to really normalize it so you don't think, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. At different levels, we all have this type of response, this social alertness, okay, is another way to say that. That's going to make it a little bit easier for us to digest. Social alertness. We just kind of know that when we're around people, there's some things we don't say, there's some things we do say. For example, if I go on a job interview, I would like to be able to set the intention to not use profanity. You know, in my world, profanity is like my second language. I was in the military, so that was kind of where it became enhanced. But in interviews, I would like to not use profanity, so I'm going to adjust myself. If I'm speaking to someone like my kid's teacher, I will also be able to adjust myself to that person. So I will anticipate what is expected in this social situation and I will adjust myself to it. So you see, it is a very valuable response that is natural to all of us. It helps prepare us for different environments, different interactions that we need to prepare for. Of course, right? Because it's okay if I'm hanging out with my friends and I use a little profanity, but it's not okay if I'm going to talk to my kid's teacher, right? We want to make sure we withhold the profanity. So anticipating those, that social etiquette is appropriate and it helps us become more acclimated or socially acceptable. And I'm okay with that. We don't necessarily need to demonize the idea of it in a way. But this is where it truly becomes disordered. When I anticipate or perhaps over anticipate a social situation. So basically, when I'm around people, I will often have a narrative that ends up being perceived as a threat in my brain, because anxiety basically is a fight or flight response. And so that means your mind is perceiving something to be a threat. So in this case, it perceives interaction with people as a threat, but even more so, it is in fact, if I just break it down into little pieces, it would be the fear of other people perhaps judging me. So social anxiety, when it comes to being a disorder, when it's gone too far, basically, it is when I anticipate people are going to reject me for some sort of reason. Or like I said, judge me for some sort of reason. In order for us to understand on the inside what we are afraid to be judged for, you got to really look at the past here. This is where we got to do important shadow work, I guess, but also looking at our past. We are habitual humans, so we also participate in habitual thinking. I often say that, and I have to remind you guys, because I got to remind myself that none of my thoughts are actually original. They don't just come out of my figment of my imagination. They are actually trained inside of me. If they are going to form somehow, they're in there somewhere. There's not always intuition. Most of the time, it's just trained responses. Now, when it comes to feelings of insecurity, it's 120% a habitual thinking pattern that I have, okay? So when I have social anxiety, what it really means is that at every or most social situations, I have a very strong discomfort towards it. Again, I'm just really nervous. I have all this thing happening inside my head. The threat is inside my head, friends. It's not people. It's in my head, right? And it's a habitual response, hence the clinical disorder aspect of it. It's habitually in every response that I have or in every interaction that I have that doesn't pose a threat of any kind. I don't even need to be anxious about it, but I will have an anxious response if I'm interacting with other humans. This, like I said, is habitual. So it starts early on before it becomes solidified in our brain. In order for us to habituate to our world around us, we learn to anticipate the responses of others. This makes sense as a survival skill for all of us humans, right? When we go to a different environment, like for example, when we go to school, that would be a new environment for a kiddo besides their home. We learn to acclimate to that. And that means that I learn to anticipate what the teacher want. If I have multiple teachers, I will learn to anticipate what each teacher wants. Then I go home and I learn to anticipate what each parent wants and each adult family member wants, and so on. And so those experiences help shape in a lot of ways what to anticipate as a way to adapt. Now, when we have gone through some sort of trauma early on in our normal process of anticipating people around us, we have not been successful at it or perceived ourselves not being successful at it. For example, if my dad would come home and he would yell at my mom and they would start fights, I've learned to anticipate, right, this very stressful situation as a method of survival. Now, this becomes an extremely important skill for that kiddo, because it's not like a regular household that's kind of quiet, perhaps, or calm. It's a more stressful environment that requires this kiddo to become even more and more dependent on their ability to anticipate social interactions and situations and what people are going to think and do as a way to survive. Now, this continues to be reinforced, of course, as every habit we have on through the years. So we select certain situations that we can use this on, and we continue to reinforce it by thinking, wow, I survived this situation because I was able to socially anticipate what was going to happen. And because we have a negativity bias, right? We're going to eventually, that's the truth, we're going to eventually hold on to negative information, negative experiences to just reinforce this really stressful habit, and we're going to think we really need it, like we can't survive without it. So through the years and through this reinforcement consistently, it becomes a habit, almost a subconscious trait that we just kind of express in social interactions anytime. So anytime. Not just in new situations, which is probably where almost social anxiety will definitely appear, but also in regular situations, I will feel a high level of alertness in those situations, and I will continue to anticipate the worst. Because in fact, in my past, that has saved me. Anticipating bad situations has somehow saved me and helped me adapt to my environment. So we have to honor that at one point, social anxiety was useful. But at one point, it became destructive for our psyche to perceive that simple social situations that we can find enjoyable become a threat, right? So I even know people that have a hard time going to a grocery store because they feel overstimulated, overwhelmed, and feel that if I go down the aisle in this grocery store, I will be judged by people. They're looking at me. They're going to talk about me, so on and so forth. So this language that we are expressing, now that is pretty important here. We are habitual, like I said. So that means our language and what we think people are going to judge us on is going to also be habitual. It's going to be certain things that I have as an insecurity about myself. So this narrative, this consistent narrative, would be something like, let's say I'm going to a gathering where there's some people that I know and there's people that I don't know. And I right away start talking about it and saying, maybe to another person, I'm kind of nervous. I don't know anybody there. And so it's not just like, I don't know anybody there. You have another internal story going along with that. That if I don't know them, they're more than likely going to be a threat of some kind. They're going to judge me for some sort of thing, maybe a trait, maybe a physical trait, a personality trait. The thing is, whatever you might think, if you have social anxiety, whatever you might think you're going to be judged on, that is not actually people. Most of the time, that is my insecurity talking. Those insecurities take years in the making to develop them, to reinforce them. So I've been maybe judged on them previously, or somebody said something about them and I've held on to it. And ever since then, I've been kind of judging myself. That's actually what it really means, is I'm judging myself on it. I might criticize myself on it. And I might now think it is people that will criticize me on it. So I attempt to avoid them. So now my mind has created a threat. It really is trying to prevent me from some sort of perceived threat, which is why you'll experience those heart palpitations, the sweating, the erratic breathing. All of those are just simply your brain perceiving it's about to do something that is threatening to it, which is, I'm going to a place that I'm going to be judged on because I don't, and I want to avoid being judged on the following, whether it's my appearance, personality characteristic, I don't know, my breath, my hair color. I don't know what it is that you might find as an insecurity, but unfortunately we project it onto others. We put it on them and we think it's really about them. Because think of the nature of social anxiety. I'm interacting with people, but people are not even doing anything. Like, they're not doing anything. All that's happening is my internal biological fight or flight response, because my brain thinks it's a threat, that is responding. It isn't really people that are doing anything that are that is a threat to me. It really is not a blatant threat to me. So this is now all about ownership. If I want to become a person who enjoys being in social situations, I got to really start taking ownership. And I have to say it one more time, ownership of my own insecurities. This is going to be something I have to write down. And I write the list as follows. What am I afraid to be judged on? I need you to just write that list. as you're writing that list, some of those things on there you have a history in. Maybe somebody one day mentioned how you have acne scars, and or somebody mentioned a mole that you may have, or how you talked, what your voice sounded like, whatever insecurity, okay, that you might be afraid to be judged on, that is technically the cause of your social anxiety. There it is. There it is. That's it. That's really it. Tala, that can't be that easy. Oh, yes, it is. So once you write that list, I need you now to even look at that list. And if you want to even do deeper work there, identify how that insecurity would have developed along the years, right? If maybe a friend said something, or maybe you've been to a social situation where you've been made to feel uncomfortable at that time, somebody judged you harshly on something, at which point we actually have been reinforcing it or perceiving it to be a fear ever since then. So our body does what it does beautifully, which is avoid it. It's like your subconscious is now believes it's a threat. People are a threat because they can hurt you. And so it almost does all the symptoms of anxiety to help you avoid those situations. So in order for us to heal that, like I said, we do the list. And then I'm old school when it comes to exposure therapy. I want people, once they identify their own biases, their own self-judgments, I want people to go out there to social situations, have a chit-chat with themselves right before they go, because their body is going to produce this biological anxious response, which is, it doesn't need to shock us, friends. If you have social anxiety, I just need you to accept that it will pop up. This experience of being nervous, heart palpitations, all that, it's going to pop up. But the last thing I want you to do is to avoid. Now we have to actually confront the situation, because our brain has been avoiding it for so long, has been blaming people for this painful physical response that people are not producing. It's just me, my hormones, my mind. I have to prove it to that subconscious brain of mine. I have to prove that it is a safe place to be. So I will go to gatherings. I will go to invitations of birthday parties, dinner, whatever the case is, friendship gathering somewhere. Whatever you need to do, I need you to push yourself to do it. And I need you to have a conversation with your brain and tell it to accept the physical responses. But however, it's not real. It's kind of like we have to tell our subconscious brain that, yes, I know that you're nervous, but there is no actual threat. So our conscious part of the brain is going to be talking to our subconscious part of the brain, and it's going to tell it, you're going to be fine. It's going to be safe. And I want you to add this extra important information to your chit chat with yourself right before you walk out to meet with people, which is, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what they're feeling. Now that is your biggest command for your brain. And you don't know what people are thinking and what people are feeling. You don't know if they're going to judge you. You only can think your own thoughts and feel your own feelings. So whatever you're about to think that's making you really scared or nervous, it is your thoughts. You are not, and I repeat, you are not actually reading anybody's mind. We're not good at reading people's physical self either. If you kind of have talked to yourself to maybe saying that you are very good at reading people, you are absolutely not. If you have social anxiety, you have a bias so narrow that you could not be accurate at reading somebody else's mind. I assure you, we can't read their mind. We can't read them physically, because I have biases. Basically, my lens that I look at life through, it has all these insecurities and I project them onto people. So I am not accurate. That's actually the best thing we could tell ourselves with humility, bring our ego down by saying, I am not accurate. When I'm reading people, I'm really not accurate. It is my insecurity that is reading people. When you work on this and you start to confront instead of avoid situations that are social, you're going to start enjoying people. You're going to start finding them as a resource, not a threat. And we do want to find people as a resource. Because one day if you need help, I need you to go ask for help. And more than likely, friends, you're going to find it. You're going to find it. So the benefit that comes from working on social anxiety is going to be tremendous for you. It's going to be more resources, abundance in good feelings when you're around people, because we do a lot of things around people. We go to the movie theaters, we go grocery shopping, we go to doctor's offices and sit in their waiting room. I mean, we interact with people all the time, and I need you to enjoy it, not avoid it, not avoid it. Yeah. So I hope this was very useful for you guys. It's a little mini pep talk about social anxiety. I've been wanting to do this for a while, and I think in the past I've done something like this, but not actually address it as social anxiety. I want to make sure I let everybody know there's nothing really wrong with you if you have social anxiety. It's just the thought process that I talked about, and we can definitely transcend it. The more you practice going to places, showing your mind that there is no real threat, that it's not, it's all in my head, then physically you start to feel better and you no longer start to anticipate threat. Especially if you've grown up, like I said, with having to anticipate people's responses was actually part of your survival. You know, that's why you would have such a skill so embedded and reinforced in you, is because at one point it was useful. But today, my friends, you don't need that. You are not a helpless child anymore. You are an adult, and that you have the ability to help yourself in any difficult situation. Any threat that presents itself to you, I promise you are to be trusted to help yourself through it. You are worthy and you are to be trusted. So we got to reprogram this message within us. And once we reprogram that, oh man, like I said, it is just fun time, enjoyable. People no longer become a threat. They become a resource. They become a place of enjoyment, a place of discovery, right? And that's what we want. We want the ability to adapt to situations and even thrive in them. No longer avoiding places, people, situations that might cause us anxiety. That's actually doing you a lot of harm. And this will just get phobic. It'll get bigger and bigger and bigger, making your world smaller and smaller and smaller. I don't want that for anyone. I don't want that misery for anyone. I've worked as a therapist for years, and I'm grateful that I've had the experience, the honor, and the privilege in working with people that trusted me to do so. I've learned a lot from them. They've been my biggest teachers, and I'm giving you kind of in about 20 something minutes what I've learned and what worked and what didn't work. Look, I've spoken to hundreds of people, if not more than that, maybe probably much more than that. And what I've learned about anxiety is everything I'm giving you here. It is a physical response. Yes. It is a disruptive response. Yes. It hurts, absolutely, but it is not unnatural. It is not unnatural. If you understand why something like that would develop, it'll help you understand that even if I feel this very threatening and unnatural and just terrible feeling that I don't want, it is actually a normal feeling and it is not going to kill me. And all I gotta do is keep going forward and confronting situations that make me scared, until my brain is reprogrammed to believe that it's no longer a threat. And it really needs to see it. You have to actually be there. So you can't avoid it and think you're working on social anxiety. It doesn't work that way. Your brain just perceives it more of a threat. You actually have to confront those situations and show your brain that there was no threat and that it was all in my head. Be aware that you have biases. Be aware that you have fears, insecurities, self-judgments, self-criticisms that took years, unfortunately, in the making, and that people do not know all those things. So I am the one who's in my head playing out a narrative that I think I know what a person is going to judge me on, or what they're going to think about me, and what they're going to criticize. And it's causing me to perceive a threat when there's no actual threat. My body will produce fight or flight response, and it will make me avoid a situation. I need us to really look at it and normalize it this way. We all go through it. It is a normal, absolutely normal feeling, but we need to confront it. I believe anybody can do it. I really do. Humans are a beautiful, adaptive, evolving being, deciding being. And I want to make sure that everybody gets to work on it and become more responsible in their ability to heal it. Us thinking it's people narrows our world, suffocates us. And fighting with a feeling thinking it shouldn't be there, and I'm just like fighting with my anxiety and it shouldn't be there, that's also not useful. I need us to accept its presence. The anxiety is going to be there because it's been programmed in me, but I can reprogram it and thrive. All right. I hope this helps you guys out. I'm so grateful that I got to do it today. And this is for the people out there that have a bit of social anxiety or a really big social anxiety. Either way, I need you to know what you're doing on in your mind when you are around people or you're anticipating to be around people. You're doing it all. You have all the power. So you start the fire. You got to put it out, friends. That's good news. That's good news today. It isn't people. It is me on the inside. And I get right with me and I start to accept that I have these insecurities and I need to make sure that these understanding that these insecurities are wounds from my past, that they are not facts and I've developed them along the years, but I do not need to punish people with them anymore. I do not need to look at them with this, with a paint of my insecurities all over them. I don't need to do that anymore. I hope that makes sense. All right. I love you guys. I wish you well this November and happy Thanksgiving if you celebrate here in the States. Thank you guys so much for joining me tonight. I'm sending you love and light, and compassionately remember that you are not a psychic. You don't know what people are thinking, and what people are thinking is none of your business. How beautiful. This has been an episode of Drive Through.